Chapter 32. Simplicity. Susie hugged her. Anaya, Junie, you darling. But that wasn't what I meant. Of course you may tell, you must tell. I shall write to your mother myself. But what worries me is the idea of having to go away from Paris for the whole day, with Giordi still coughing a little, and no one but that silly angel to stay with him while you're out, and no one but you to take yourself and the others to school. But Junie, I've got to do it, she sobbed out, clutching the child tighter. Junie Fulmer, with her strangely mature perception of the case, unseemingly of every case that fate might call on her to deal with, sat for a moment motionless in Susie's hold. Then she freed her wrists with an adroit twist, and leaning back against the pillow said judiciously, "You'll never in the world bring up a family of your own, if you take on like this over other people's children." Through all her turmoil of spirit, the observation drew a laugh from Susie. A family of my own, I don't deserve one, the way I'm behaving to her, Junie still considered her. Why dear, a change will do you good. You need it, she pronounced. Susie rose with a laughing sigh. I'm not at all sure it will. But I've got to have it, all the same. Only I do feel anxious and I can't even leave you my address. Junie still seemed to examine the case. Can't you even tell me where you're going? She ventured, as if not quite sure of the delicacy of asking. Well no, I don't think I can. Not till I get back. Besides, even if I could, it wouldn't be much use, because I couldn't give you my address there. I don't know what it will be. But what does it matter, if you're coming back tonight? Of course I'm coming back. How could you possibly imagine I should think of leaving you for more than a day? Oh, I shouldn't be afraid, not much, that is, with the poker, a Nat's water pistol, amended Junie, still judicious. Susie again unfolded her vehemently, and then turned to more practical matters. She explained that she wished, if possible, to catch an 8:30 train from the Gare de Lyon, and that there was not a moment to lose, if the children were to be dressed and fed, and full instructions written out for Junie and Angel, before she rushed for the underground. While she bathed Giordi, and then hurried into her own clothes, she could not help wondering at her own extreme solicitude for her charges. She remembered, with a pang, how often he had deserted Clarissa Vanderlyn for the whole day, and even for two or three in succession, poor little Clarissa, whom she knew to be so unprotected, so exposed to evil influences. She had been too much absorbed in her own greedy bliss to be more than intermittently aware of the child. But now, she felt, no sorrow however ravaging, no happiness however absorbing, would ever again isolate her from her kind. And then these children were so different. The exquisite Clarissa was already the predestined victim of her surroundings. Her budding soul was divided from Susie's by the same barrier of incomprehension that separated the latter from Mrs. Vanderlyn. Clarissa had nothing to teach Susie but the horror of her own hard little appetites, whereas the company of the noisy argumentative Fulmers had been a school of wisdom and abnegation. As she applied the brush to Giordi's shining head and the handkerchief to his snuffling nose, the sense of what she owed him was so borne in on Susie that she interrupted the process to catch him to her bosom. I'll have such a story to tell you when I get back tonight, if you'll promise me to be good all day, she bargained with him, and Giordi, always astute, bargained back. Effer I promise, I'd like to know what story. At length all was in order. Junie had been enlightened, and Angel stunned, by the minuteness of Susie's instructions, and the latter, waterproofed and stoutly shod, descended the doorstep, and paused to wave at the pyramid of heads yearning to her from an upper window. It was hardly light, and still raining, when she turned into the dismal street. As usual, it was empty, but at the corner she perceived a hesitating taxi, with luggage piled beside the driver. Perhaps it was some early traveler, just arriving, who would release the carriage in time for her to catch it, and thus avoid the walk to the metro, and the subsequent strap hanging, for it was the work people's hour. Susie raced toward the vehicle, which, overcoming its hesitation, was beginning to move in her direction. Observing this, she stopped to see where it would discharge its load. Thereupon the taxi stopped also, and the load discharged itself in front of her in the shape of Nick Lansing. The two stood staring at each other through the rain till Nick broke out. "Here are you going? I came to get you." "To get me? To get me?" she repeated. Beside the driver she had suddenly remarked the old suitcase from which her husband had obliged her to extract Strefford cigars as they were leaving Como, and everything that had happened since seemed to fall away and vanish in the pang and rapture of that memory. "To get you, yes. Of course." He spoke the words peremptorily, almost as if they were an order. "Here were you going?" he repeated. Without answering, she turned toward the house. He followed her, and the laden taxi closed the procession. "Why are you out in such weather without an umbrella?" he continued, in the same severe tone, drawing her under the shelter of his. "Oh, because Junie's umbrella's in tatters, and I had to leave her mine, as I was going away for the whole day." She spoke the words like a person in a trance. "For the whole day? At this hour? Where?" They were on the doorstep, and she fumbled automatically for her key, let herself in, and led the way to the sitting room. It had not been tidied up since the night before. The children's school books lay scattered on the table and sofa, and the empty fireplace was gray with ashes. She turned to Nick in the pallid light. "I was going to see you," she stammered. "I was going to follow you to Fontainebleau, if necessary, to tell you. ... to prevent you. ... he repeated in the same aggressive tone. "Tell me what? Prevent what? Tell you that there must be some other way. ... some decent way. ... of our separating, without that horror. That horror of your going off with a woman. ... He stared, and then burst into a laugh. The blood rushed to her face. As he had caught a familiar ring in his laugh, and it wounded her. What business had he, at such a time, to laugh in the old way? "I'm sorry, but there is no other way, I'm afraid. No other way but one," he corrected himself. She raised her head sharply. "L? That you should be the woman. Oh, my dear." He had dropped his mocking smile, and was at her side, her hands in his. "H, my dear, don't you see that we've both been feeling the same thing, and at the same hour? You lay awake thinking of it all night, didn't you? So did one. Whenever the clock struck, I said to myself, she's hearing it too. ... and I was up before daylight, and packed my traps for I never want to set foot again in that awful hotel, where I've lived in hell for the last 3 days. And I swore to myself that I'd go off with a woman by the first train I could catch, and so I mean to, my dear." She stood before him numb. Yes, numb. That was the worst of it. The violence of the reaction had been too great, and she could hardly understand what he was saying. Instead, she noticed that the tassel of the window blind was torn off again. Oh, those children. And vaguely wondered if his luggage were safe on the waiting taxi. One heard such stories. His voice came back to her. "Uzi, listen." He was entreating. "You must see yourself that it can't be. We're married, isn't that all that matters? Oh, I know I've behaved like a brute. A cursed arrogant ass. You couldn't wish that ass a worse kicking than I've given him. But that's not the point, you see. The point is that we're married. ... married, doesn't it mean something to you, something inexorable? It does to me. I didn't dream it would in just that way. But all I can say is that I suppose the people who don't feel it aren't really married, and they'd better separate. Much better. As for us," through her tears she gasped out. "That's what I felt. ... that's what I said to Streff. ... He was upon her with a great embrace. "Why, darling? My darling. You have told him?" "Yes," she panted. "That's why I'm living here." She paused. "And you've told Coral?" She she felt his embrace relax. He drew away a little, still holding her, but with lowered head. No. I haven't. Oh, Nick. But then, he caught her to him again, resentfully. Well then what? What do you mean? What earthly difference does it make? But if you've told her you were going to marry her, try as she would, her voice was full of silver chimes. Marry her? Marry her? He echoed. But how could I? What does marriage mean anyhow? If it means anything at all, it means you. And I can't ask Coral Hicks just to come and live with me, can I? Between crying and laughing, she lay on his breast, and his hand passed over her hair. They were silent for a while, then he began again. Who said it yourself yesterday, you know? She strayed back from sunlit distances. Yesterday? Yes. That Grace Fulmer says you can't separate two people who have been through a lot of things. Ah, been through them together, it's not the things. You see, it's the togetherness, she interrupted. The togetherness, that's it. He seized on the word, as if it had just been coined to express their case, and his mind could rest in it without farther labor. The doorbell rang, and they started. Through the window they saw the taxi driver gesticulating inquiries as to the fate of the luggage. He wants to know if he's to leave it here, Susie laughed. No, no. You're to come with me, her husband declared. Come with you? She laughed again at the absurdity of the suggestion. Of course. This very instant. What did you suppose? That I was going away without you? Run up and pack your things, he commanded. My things? My things? But I can't leave the children. He stared, between indignation and amusement. And leave the children? Nonsense. Why, you said yourself you were going to follow me to Fontainebleau, she reddened again, this time a little painfully, didn't know what I was doing. I had to find you, but I should have come back this evening, no matter what happened. No matter what? She nodded, and met his gaze resolutely. No, but really, really, I can't leave the children till Nat and Grace come back. I promised I wouldn't. Yes, but you didn't know then. Why on earth can't their nurse look after them? There isn't any nurse but me. Good Lord. But it's only for 2 weeks more, she pleaded. Whoa, weeks. Do you know how long I've been without you? He seized her by both wrists, and drew them against his breast. Home with me at least for 2 days, Susie, he entreated her. Oh, she cried, that's the very first time you've said my name. Susie, Susie, then my Susie, Susie. And you've only said mine once, you know. Nick, she sighed, at peace, as if the one syllable were a magic seed that hung out great branches to envelop them. Well, then, Susie, be reasonable. Come. Reasonable, oh, reasonable, she sobbed through laughter. Unreasonable, then. That's even better. She freed herself, and drew back gently. Ick, I swore I wouldn't leave them, and I can't. It's not only my promise to their mother, it's what they've been to me themselves. You don't know. You can't imagine the things they've taught me. They're awfully naughty at times, because they're so clever, but when they're good they're the wisest people I know. She paused, and a sudden inspiration illuminated her. But why shouldn't we take them with us? She exclaimed. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.